You're listening to the Americans for Truth Hour with your host, Peter LaBarbera. Each week, you'll hear compelling interviews with everyday heroes on the front lines of the culture war. People who put faith and truth above the lies of political correctness. Americans for Truth Hour will help you to stay informed and engaged on the side of life, marriage, and the God-ordained family. Please stand with us as we work to make America, in the words of President Ronald Reagan, a shining city on the hill. And once again, one nation under God. And now, here's Peter LaBarbera.
Well, welcome back, everybody, to the Americans for Truth Hour. I'm Pete LaBarbera, president of Americans for Truth about homosexuality. We are a single-issue organization devoted to opposing the well-funded and very powerful LGBT lobby. That's lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender. Now they've added a few other acronyms, a few other causes on there, including queer, which I don't really know what exactly falls under that, but we are the other side, and we're outgunned in the world of public policy. I think we're outgunned with the spending, but we have the truth. And I'm excited today to be bringing you somebody. We've never talked to somebody who specializes on the transsexual, transgender issue. And this is exciting for me because I think this is an area where there's a lot of concern. We're going to be talking to Walt Heyer. I hope I've pronounced that right. Walt, are you on the line?
Yes, I'm on the line.
And did I pronounce your name right?
Yeah, it's Walt Heyer. You got it.
Got it. Walt has written three books, and one is his life story. Walt Heyer is a man who actually went through one of these so-called sex change operations. And he came out of that. He found Christianity. He's left that lifestyle. So we have a former transsexual. And this is so important. But first, I need to say, our show airs. This is pre-taped, but our show airs at Saturday Night Live at 11 o'clock. So I don't think there's too many listening then. But if you're very young and listening to this, this is going to be a very graphic discussions at times. It almost has to be when you're talking about people changing their sex organs so into confusion. I mean, we call it gender confusion at Americans for Truth. This is a very delicate topic. So if you have a child, don't have them listening right now. Walt, you are based in California, correct?
Right.
And how old are you?
I'm 70.
70 years old. Okay.
Young 70.
You're young 70. Hey, and I think we're going to do three shows because I really think this is a hot issue everywhere you turn. And now you've got the media, of course, just as the media promoted the so-called gay issue. Now they're promoting the transgender issue, and the transgender activists are basically the Young Turks of the movement. They just took everything that the so-called gay activists did, right?
Right.
And they just said, hey, let's do the same thing. And you know what? The same result is happening. The media is now promoting. You see the Chastity Bono story, which we talked about, this terrible, terrible it's just the most tragic thing to witness this woman who we saw her as a girl. She was a beautiful young girl, Sonny and Cher's child. And now look at her, Walt. It's everywhere you turn now is this transgender stuff.
Well, this is kind of the new age, nouveau thing that the media is promoting. And unfortunately, what people don't know is that you can never change your gender. I mean, that's
right.
One of the things that they never talk about. And I think the people who are listening to these segments that we're going to be doing need to understand that it is categorically impossible to change somebody's gender. So that's kind of number one and up front.
Now, Walt, I know we're going to save our public policy stuff for the last segment, but the fact is one of the goals of the transgender movement, and most people are completely unaware of these goals, by the way, Walt, is right. they want to go back. I think in Illinois they can, my state they can, I'm pretty sure. They go back and they change their birth certificate after they change so-called change their gender, which, of course, they're not really doing, but they go back and they change their birth certificate. It's incredible.
Right. And, you know, it's actually a little bit worse than that, Peter, and people are completely unaware that what they're doing now, the activists are doing. Now, I know we're going to talk more about the public policy, but it's worse than just having surgery and changing the gender. Now they're trying to pass laws so you can just change your gender.
Without the surgery.
Without the surgery, which means if people get their head around it, begin to understand that then you can have same-sex marriage, because two guys could go in and one could say that he's a female, the other the male, and then they could get the birth certificate changed because one's advocating being a female, and then they can go down and get a marriage license. So this is kind of the end run around the whole marriage thing. So this is, we're seeing these laws beginning to take place, especially in Boston and California. They're just evolving. So it's a much bigger thing than just gender changing.
It affects people's privacy. I mean, I don't want my wife to be in a bathroom with a guy who thinks he's a woman. And and as you said, now it doesn't matter. He doesn't have to have had the sex change. He could just say, "Hey, I'm legally a woman," even though he's a biological male. And there he is in the restroom with women, even girls.
Yeah, and this is where they're trying to get. And this is the objective. This is the whole movement. So, and it's come a long ways. And unfortunately, we have a lot of the lawmakers who are just caving on these issues and won't stand up.
Right. Well, we're going to get to that, and I'm excited to have you. Thank you for being on the show. Folks, you can get all of our past archived interviews at AmericansForTruth.com. Just go to the radio archive button, and then they're all listed. We've got a year's worth of interviews, some fascinating people. Last interview we did was with Judith Reisman, and she talked about these sex radicals the pioneers, heroes to the liberal side, but the destruction is great. And Walt, you are a living proof of the destruction of this radical sexual revolution. You're it. And I want to start by getting your story. Talk about, I've just started your book. It's a very good read. It's well written. It's called Trading My Sorrows, A True Story of Betrayals, Bad Choices, Love, and the Journey Home. This is available on Walt's website, and I encourage all listeners to get this book. You can get it on Amazon. It's called Trading My Sorrows, Walt Heyer, and that's spelled H-E-Y-E-R. Walt also has his own websites, sexchangeregret.com, sexchangeinfo.com, and then you can just get the book also at the Trading My Sorrows book website, which is tradingmysorrows.com. Tell us the story from the beginning, Walt.
Sure. You know, it is. It's a long, twisted story, and I'm so happy that you're allowing me to share this with the audience, because I think people really need to have their head around this issue, and it's a tough one. But, I started out life like most young boys do and had a good family, and it was, in the late 40s. And my father was a very strict disciplinarian, and so he was pretty heavy-handed with a hardwood floor plank, and would, when I was young, if he was going to discipline me, he would use that across my little bare butt and beat me into submission, really. And then I had a grandmother.
Hold on, Walt. So are you talking not just spanking over the top?
Over the top.
Bordering on abuse?
Today it would be considered severe abuse. I mean, he would beat me until my little butt was black and blue.
That's kind of sick, yeah.
My knees would cave, and then he would pull me back up by my arm and then lay a couple of more on there. But, that was kind of the mindset for a lot of families in that time. Discipline was kind of king.
Yeah.
And so...
your grandma...
Yeah, and then my grandmother, when they would take me over there and have me be babysat by my grandmother, she would dress me up as a female. In fact, even made me a dress. And so when my father found out about this dress, then he began to use vocal things toward me, like, if I did something wrong, he would say, "Well, you're acting like a girl. If you're going to act like a girl, I'll treat you like a girl." So you had all these sort of imprinting going on that was really unpleasant for a young boy trying to grow up at the age probably 5, 6, 7, 8, somewhere in there.
Now, let me get to this grandma thing. Why was she dressing you up as a girl? That's weird.
I don't even understand that. She was she was fascinated by doing that. And so, you know, and I didn't object as a young boy. It was her thing. I mean, she had me standing on a little cushion so I'd be up off the ground, and she would fashion these dresses. She was, that was her business, was making dresses. And so
she wanted, it sounds to me like she wanted a granddaughter.
It very well could be.
And now, and this is, boy, I'm so glad we're having this discussion, because everybody probably knows these parents who allow their sons to play with girl toys or to dress up. And that's the cool thing now. I guess that's the politically correct thing. Oh, if your son wants to act like a girl, hey, who are we to impose our gender conformity on your son? You must be opposed to this idea of this crossing over.
Yeah, there's too much of this going on, and I think that's why we're seeing this whole transgender thing evolve in a much greater way than it has. Parents are not parenting anymore. I don't advocate people use strong discipline, but you don't need to dress a guy up in a dress at any time. And this is one thing that is going on more and more.
Now, Walt, I appreciate, we have a break coming up here, but I appreciate that you said that right off the bat in your book, you said, my view is that the first step in being able to make positive changes in life is to take responsibility for our behaviors and not to blame others. And I think you're right. The tendency in all across America is, hey, I'm going to blame my mom and dad for this. And sometimes we even get carried away in trying to analyze homosexuality. We presume that it was the parents' fault, when I think there's a number of ways into homosexuality and there's a number of ways out. And so I want to talk about this because clearly in your life, there were factors that contributed, and yet you're not blaming those factors. We'll be right back with Walt Heyer after the break. He is the author of Trading My Sorrows. You can get that at tradingmysorrows.com. Our website is americansfortruth.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Pete LaBarbera of Americans for Truth, and we're talking to Walt Heyer, who I'm just getting to know. He is a former transgender. He had a sex change operation as a man to become a woman. He lived as, was it Linda, Walt?
Laura.
Laura, I'm sorry.
Laura Jensen.
Okay, and then he, in 1990, he found the Lord, apparently, and reversed. Walt, this is very important. I appreciate your honesty in saying we can't blame, our parents, and for we have to take responsibility for ourselves. And yet, I cannot help but think that in the lives of transgender people, these situations where you had, like you had, your grandmother dressing you up as a female, these things have huge imprinting on a young boy.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I think what we've learned, and over the years, and of course, I didn't know it when I was a young boy, but there was what we call brain hardwiring going on at that time. When you begin to put these things into a child's mind, it begins to actually hardwire them for a belief system that at some point in time they're going to have to overcome. And I think this is a good time to point out the fact no transgender is it ever part of a womb process. It is an evolution of something that happened during early childhood.
It's okay, so you mean it wasn't, you weren't born transgender?
No, nobody is.
Okay. Just like the gay thing, you know, they always wanted to, because they know that people, if they believe that you were born transgender, Walt, then they say, well, that he can't help his, what he's going through. So the political activists understand the importance of labeling it as an innate thing.
Right. And there is one exception. They're called intersex, and those are the individuals who are born with both genitalia. Those people do quite often require a surgical procedure, but that's entirely different. Intersex is very different than transgender. They are not the same, and people need to be able to understand that they are not the same at all.
Okay. Now, so now you've got this grandmother who wanted you to be a girl, apparently.
Right, yeah.
And she's dressing you up. And now, did this go on for a number of years?
Yeah, we're real hard to pin down, but I would say it probably did go on for 2 or 3 years over a period of time. And I was there frequently being babysat by her, so that was not a one occasion event. And
now, see, I'd want to slap a woman like that. I mean, I'm sorry, but that's just ridiculous to impose your desires on a poor, innocent child.
Well, you know, little grandma who was a short little thing, had her little apron on and a cigarette in her mouth that was burnt right down to her lips, and always in her little apron was a half pint of whiskey. So I'm not sure how sober grandma was. I'm not blaming her. She was just doing her thing, and I was part of that process. But you know, these things do have an impact, obviously. They're bound to any time you have a repeated event like that. But it didn't really stop there, Peter. As my life began to unfold, my dad's stepbrother, who was quite a bit younger, he was in his teens, found out about the dress and found out, you know, through the family discussions that Grandma had made me a dress. And so he began to tease me, and that teasing ended up turning into him sexually molesting me for about 3 years.
This was your uncle?
Yeah, it was my Uncle Fred. So,
okay, so he basically is sort of like an opportunist there. He started teasing you, and then he raped you, basically?
Well, he fondled me, and so, you know, he would, you know, grab through my my pants and stuff, and he thought that was funny, and would tease me, and so he did at one point, you know, take all my clothes off one time in his car, and I left the car with nothing on and hid in the bushes, and then he got scared and came and threw my clothes on the ground near the bush so I could get dressed. But you know, it's so funny how the family system can impact somebody. In this particular situation, when I went home and told my mom about what Uncle Fred had done, you know, she said I was a liar. And so they would never believe me. And so, you know, because Uncle Fred would deny it. And so then I told my dad, I said, no, I'm not lying. This is the truth. And so from that point on, both of my parents and even to my mom's death, felt that I was always lying because of that one event. You know, I could never overcome that with them. They just could not believe, because Fred was older and I was younger, that Fred would do anything like this. And so,
I'm just getting this picture of that. You were victimized as a young person. And I know from your book, just what I've started on it, you don't play the victim role, but I mean, you were victimized, Walt.
Yeah, no, I don't think it's healthy to play the victim role.
Right.
I think, you know, the only way to overcome things is to put that aside and move forward, and get healthy.
But the facts are the facts, and I think when you look at so many, not just transgender lives, but gay, lesbian, bisexual, one thing the media does not want people to know is there's an awful lot of dysfunction in the upbringing and in the lives of these people.
No, absolutely. Yeah, and I tell you the truth, my heart goes out to them, because there is nobody really there for them to listen to. And, you know, if they really understood what that family upbringing was doing to these kids. And I got a letter yesterday that is my story all over again. And the kid had the same experiences pretty much, and ended up in his 20s wanting to have a sex change surgery. And I looked at it and I said, you know, this is textbook. It happens. And we need to be aware that the things that we do to our children when we're bringing them up have a very strong impact on them.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Okay. Now, so you had the grandmother who treated you like a girl. Mm-hmm. You got the borderline abusive father. I mean, in terms of the punishment, and then his uncle Fred is a pervert who basically is molesting you. And you were how old at this time?
I was probably under 10 years old during that time.
Wow. Okay. Where does it go from there?
Okay. The other thing is that my mom was also an abuser. She was actually more of an abuser than my father was. And in fact, just before her death, she admitted to my current wife and myself that she realized she had almost killed me. And I had confronted her about this 10 years ago. And she denied it. But
what did she do when you were young?
Well, she would hang me up like I was a piece of meat in a meat locker and just wail on me. And that was her idea of discipline. And I can laugh. It's kind of funny to me today. I don't know why. I've gotten over all of the hurt and the pain. And I think one of the things that really helped me with that was her to finally admit it. And so...
Did she repent or did she just admit it?
She admitted it and said she was sorry.
Now, was there religion in the home when you were growing up?
Yeah, religion to the degree that they took me and my brother to church and dropped me off.
Hmm.
But they weren't part of that process. So.
Right. Now, when you said your mother was wailing on you, was this with wood?
Usually with some kind of stick or piece of wood or something.
Wow.
Yeah. And so...
How do you come out of this? I mean, I lived a pretty peaceful childhood. I mean, I hear these stories, and it's almost hard to relate. I think for the average person, it's hard to relate. Tell me your thought processes as you're experiencing all this.
Well, you know, I wrote in the book, Trading My Sorrows, about the fact that there was a day where I could not stop crying. I mean, I literally could not stop crying. The pain was so immense for me. And that could have been the time when I really started to fracture a great deal. In fact, they were going to go to dinner, and they just left me in the house as a young child and said, "We don't want anything to do with you. We're leaving." So it was shortly after that episode of crying that I decided that no one was ever going to make me cry again. And
crying after one of the beatings?
You know, I don't remember if it was or if I just succumbed to the collection of events that had happened, and I just, you know, just sort of crashed. And so, but I did resolve at that point to never let anybody make me cry again, because if they were trying to hurt me, I was just not going to cry. And so from that point on, no matter how much they hit me or whatever, I didn't cry. I flat out refused to cry. And that was my coping mechanism. I was not going to cry, but also coping mechanism to dive into perhaps trying to separate myself from who I was. Because if I was that bad as a boy, I had to become something else that people would like, because they obviously didn't like who I was.
Wow.
And so, you know, trying to walk out of Walt and become whatever I could seemed appealing to me, because I didn't particularly like being wailed on or dressed up or anything at that point. But then that actually became who I would eventually become, was what my grandmother was trying to create.
Wow. Uh-huh. And you had a vivid imagination, I imagine.
I had a vivid imagination. And actually, those thoughts about wanting to become a female became like a static on the radio, where it just would not go away. I mean, it began to occupy more and more of my thought life, and my thought life began to turn to fantasy about doing this. And so now this new female persona was really taking over my entire thoughts and feelings and desires.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Did you ever look back at this, now that you're a born-again Christian, Walt, and say, wow, God, you know, allowed me to go through that so that now I could reach many, many more people than I ever thought possible?
Well, I do. I've always felt, and I've always said, that, you know, God's given me the gift that he wants me to unwrap and share with other people. And that gift is to be restored and to be healthy and sound as I am today, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, Walt. My heart goes out to you. We're talking to Walt Heyer, who's written a book called Trading My Sorrows. It's his autobiography about his life, getting into the transgender movement, and then getting out of it through Christ. We'll be right back after the break. Our website, and where you can hear all our interviews, is AmericansForTruth.org.
Are you sick and tired of homosexuality and gay marriage being celebrated by the liberal media and popular culture? Do you worry about the radical gay agenda being pushed on young children in schools? Are you worried that the gay movement will destroy America's religious freedoms? And are you offended that Christians are called bigots and homophobes just because they agree with God that homosexual behavior is wrong? Americans for Truth About Homosexuality is a single-issue group devoted to exposing and fighting the gay agenda. They are not about hate, but love for God's truth. They are Christians, so instead of celebrating homosexuality, they lift up the many ex-gays who have left it behind and now lead godly lives through Christ. But Americans for Truth needs your help. The gay lobby has lots of money, power, and media support, but it lacks truth. Please help keep this show on the air and educate America about the dangerous goals of this anti-Christian movement. Make your gift online today at AmericansForTruth.com. That's AmericansForTruth.com.
Welcome back, everybody. This is the Americans for Truth Hour, and we're talking to Walt Heyer, who's a man who actually did the sex change thing. We're going to get to that. We're hearing his testimony, and I'll tell you, my heart is breaking just hearing these all this trauma that you experienced, all this misfortune and abuse as a young boy, you know, starting so young. And I think this causes, this issue is so difficult because I think so many people in the LGBT movement experience trials and trauma, oftentimes were abused or neglected. And that doesn't mean that that's an excuse for homosexuality, but it certainly sheds light on the condition of this. And Walt, I mean, wow. I mean, I don't think, you know, logic would dictate that people who actually think they're in the wrong sex, you know, would have had trials, things that would lead them down this path. Now,
Sure. We're
at the point of your testimony where you're saying now that you resolve never to cry again. Okay, now you're entering your teenage years, I guess.
Right.
How does it go from there?
Well, it goes good. You know, I had a girlfriend, and, you know, I was pretty much a jock at school. I was running track. I played baseball. I played football. And was pretty much an all-around guy. But inside, I was struggling like all get out, because I had these feelings, even though I was a jock on one side, I had the feelings about being a female on the other that I didn't share with anybody. And so as time went on, with the relationships I had with gals, which were all good and healthy at the time, and, then I graduated from school, and I did go into theater arts, and that was kind of an outlet for me to sort of live out some other sort of fantasy positions in terms of what I was doing on the stage. But I did have another relationship that I got into that looked like it was going to turn into a marriage, and I went to at the time I was going to an Episcopal church. At the time I was attending church fairly regularly, and I went to Father Barber at the time, who was the father of the church there, and I was telling him, you know, I'm not sure whether I should get married, confidentially telling him about the struggle I was having with gender issues. And a surprise of all surprise, he said, well, you need to come back next Monday night and we'll talk about this. And so I said, okay, I could use some counseling around it, because I've never had any counseling. So I showed up in his office upstairs. This is in the little town of Eagle Rock. And so here I am walking into his office. On the corner of his desk was a pint of whiskey and a six-pack of half quarts of beer. And so that was the way we were going to have our counseling session, was around booze and beer. Well, I didn't drink booze. I drank beer, but I was not much into the booze thing. So as he began to drink, we see another thing take place about what the misconceptions of gender issues are, even with this father who I was seeking counseling from, came out from behind the desk and took off his long black robe, and he was naked. And he really wanted to have sex, homosexual sex with me. Well, I left. I mean, I bolted big time, never went back. And these are the things that people do not understand. People who struggle with gender issues aren't all homosexual. I never
right.
was homosexual.
Right.
And so, you begin to be fearful as a result of that. And people you're supposed to be able to trust and share a story with who turn the story around and won't listen to why you're hurting and how you got there, like you are today, which is so important. To be able to share that story, to be able to walk through it and have people understand how, what happened and how you got there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, when this happened, were you in high school or college?
I was actually employed. I was out of school.
Okay.
And I'd already done my school, and I was employed at the time. So, I was contemplating getting married, and as it turned out, I went to another church and met with another pastor, and we eventually did get married about a year or two later. But I was still struggling, and that struggle continued through the time. Now, I became an associate design engineer and worked on the Apollo space missions, had a very successful career in the electronics and so forth, and then went into the auto industry where I had another very successful career. But all this time, I was struggling with what had happened in my childhood. And mm-hmm. It was not adversely affecting my career, but it was adversely affecting how I dealt with coping with this. And I began to drink more. I began to have...
Let me interrupt you there. You say on one page of your book, you said, nearly 40 years of struggling with the nearly constant chatter from the girl who lived in my head.
Yeah.
Now, as a Christian, I want to say, gosh, that's Satan,
Yeah.
That's Satan telling you, hey, Walt, you're a girl. Your real name it should be Laura. Come on. I mean, what is that? Is this something that was like almost like an alternate identity?
Yeah. I think, as I've learned, Peter, one of the things that we know now, and I mentioned it before, is called hardwiring. And hardwiring is how we are made as a result of our early childhood experiences. So, hardwiring can be unhardwired. It doesn't mean you're permanently that way, but it does mean that you are going to have that hardwiring is going to have a profound effect on your thinking and your behavior throughout your life. Now, I was battling it somewhat successfully. I mean, it hadn't completely taken over my life, but I was using alcohol as a coping mechanism, which is a folly. I mean, it's not going to work.
Now, and when did you get married? How old were you when you got married?
I was 21 when I got married.
Okay, now, was your wife, do you have children?
Yeah, I have two children, and they're in their 40s.
Okay, and when did your wife, or did your wife, become aware of this, of these struggles about a female identity?
Well, I thought it was important to share it with her before we got married, and I said, I don't know where this is going. I don't exactly know where it came from, but I said, together I think we can battle through this, and I don't want to act out. I just need for you to know that it's happening and that I'm struggling with it. And she was in love with me enough at the time that, we both dug into it and said, we're going to battle this together and we'll fight it. And we both, from time to time, we weren't regular churchgoers, but we were believers and began to battle it that way. And I probably didn't put enough of Christ into my life at that time to be able to unwind it, because I was pretty much having a lot of fun drinking and working and making good money. I was very successful. So I think that clouded my ability to cope properly with what was going on.
So now, did this voice grow to the point where you said, I've got to do something about it, I've got to do the operation?
Yeah, it did. And that constant gnawing at me did get the best of me. And I met with some very good Christian counselors at the time. And that's one of the things that, Christian counselors, as good as they are, and many of them are just outstanding, this is at the time. Now, we're talking nearly 30 years ago. At the time, it was kind of new, and people didn't, the best counselors in the world did not really totally understand what to do with it. And so they just didn't know. I mean, it was too new. And so I don't blame them for it.
What did they tell you, these counselors?
Well, I saw Dr. Dennis Guernsey at Fuller Seminary in Pasadena, and he said, I don't know. I mean, he was looking for demons. He was looking for all kinds of things in me. And he said, I really don't know. He said, my biggest concern is that you're probably, you're looking to me like you might commit suicide. And my concern is that I just don't want that to happen. And so I said, well, I'm struggling, but I don't feel like I'm suicidal at this point. But He had told his wife, unbeknownst to me, I talked to him years later, that he did think I was going to commit suicide, and had told his wife that I was. But as it turned out, you know, I ended up telling my wife, I've just got to give this girl my life, and so I got divorced.
You got in a and you went to Colorado to do the operation, right?
I went to Dr. Stanley Biber in Colorado, and opted. The first time I went, I changed my mind and actually walked out of the hospital and tried to, and I again for another year and a half or 2 years tried to battle it, and it overcame me. I mean, it overcame me. I'm regretfully say that I didn't have the skill to battle back, and I think it's trying to, when you have something that you're dealing with for 40 years, you want to resolve it. I guarantee you that, because it's starting to wear you out.
Right.
And when you're using alcohol, you're not using the best things in life to cope with the problem. So that was a big mistake as well. So
take us to, you got a minute before the break, Walt, take us to the point where you actually decided you are going to do the operation, and where did you do it?
Yeah, I decided I was going to do it if I got approved for the surgery. So I went to a counselor, a psychologist in San Francisco, who approved me right away. And he said, oh, your story is a classic story, and, you know, surgery is going to help resolve the problem. So he wrote me a letter of approval that I could go see Dr. Biber and have the surgery done. That was Dr. Paul Walker, who was the number one guy in the country at the time. And in dealing with this particular issue, he was the most knowledgeable, and in fact had written, just a month before he approved me, had written the standards of care.
Wow. Wow. Now this, so he said you go back to Biber for the second time, because the first time you left, so you went back to him for the operation?
I went back to him for the operation. I got letters both times from Dr. Walker.
Okay, we got one more segment here, and we'll find out about that operation. We're talking to Walt Heyer, who's the author of Trading My Sorrows, and we'll be right back after the break. Welcome back, everybody. We're talking to Walt Heyer, who's a man who actually had a sex change to become a woman, so-called, and he has pulled back away from that with the help of God. Okay, so now, Walt, you've got these letters, this recommendation. You had pulled back from doing the surgery the first time. Now you're going back to the same guy?
Right. I went in 1981 and then turned back from it, but I went back in 1983 after getting a second letter of approval for the surgery. This was 2 years later now, and had the surgery in April of 1983.
Okay, and the doctor had told you that this is going to solve the problem. What, first of all, I mean, take a couple minutes to tell us, what is it like? I mean, you're having your I call it mutilation, your God-given genitalia mutilated. The women, when they do it, they're having their healthy breasts removed. I mean, it must have been, were you so caught up in the problem of this alternate identity that it was just a relief to get it done? Were you fearful? I mean, talk about that.
Yeah, you know, I got to admit, you know, when I went there, there was a little bit of fear, but I felt like there had to be some relief from this constant chatter that had been going on in my head for 40 years. So, you know, I opted for it, and as I came out of the surgery, I can actually say the first few moments, there was a tremendous amount of relief, like, whew, wow, you know. And so there was this sort of glorified time in there where, yeah, finally I've got there. And it could have been that, you know, the medication I was on was helping me with that a little bit too. Because, you know, so during that week, I didn't have any regrets or remorse or anything. I was concerned about what my life was going to be like. But, you know, at the time I was working, I was the national operations manager for American Honda Motor Company. I was in charge of all the ports of entry around the country. So I was, you know, I had a good sound job. And so as that time period evolved on, and I began to tell the staff at Honda where I worked what I had gone through, and that I was going to become Laura once I got the paperwork done, I was immediately terminated. And that sort of ended my career life back in 1983. And by 1984, I realized I needed to begin to deal with the issue of alcoholism. And so I started going to meetings and started a recovery process.
Okay, now hold on, Walt, because I want to boy, I'll tell you, this is such a story. We may have to pick up on it in the next interview. But okay, a lot of things. First of all, I have to say, and I probably represent many, many millions of men, the idea of having your penis removed is probably among the most horrifying things you could think of. You know, you think of Lorena Bobbitt, although this is more organized.
Right, right.
So, I mean, what, first of all, talk about it. Is it, I mean, again, this is not something for children, but it's just, is the attempt as it goes now to create a sort of a makeshift female anatomy? What are they trying? Have these procedures been worked on? They must have much different methods now than they did when you did it. To talk a little bit about that.
Well, I don't think the methods are all that different. I believe they're pretty much the same. Dr. Biber's the one that sort of pioneered them, and Marcy Bowers has taken that. She picked up from there, which Marcy Bowers is actually a man doing the surgery as a transgender person.
Man.
So we have transgenders doing transgender surgery. I sort of almost had to dissociate from the fact that what I refer to, because it's easy for me to do, is say Snoopy is now gone. And so that was easier for me than to talk about genitalia, that it just sort of softens the blow for me to talk about it in relation to Snoopy's gone, and so that helped, I guess, at the time, my thinking that I was becoming this other gender.
Right.
But the fact of the matter is, you're not becoming another gender. You're still a guy without a penis wearing a dress. So it's all.
And the relief is not. It started out okay. You get that initial rush, but what happened to the part about okay, I'm going to start the problem's going to go away? What's happening in your mind at this point?
Well, then you begin to realize that your life has changed so dramatically that, you know, yeah, you did, maybe you at first you feel like, wow, I resolved one problem, but now I resolved one problem, now I've got 15 other problems, so maybe it would have been better to deal with it the other way, but now you're where you are as a female, you've changed your birth record, you're now living as a female, you're working as a female, and you're going through the recovery process. And fortunately, when I came out of the recovery house, I went to a church in Foster City, California, where the pastor, who's a great guy, still a friend of mine, we still communicate to this day almost 30 years later. And so, you know, he told me, I said, do I have to change when I go to church? Do I need to become Walt again? And he said, he looked at me really, really cool. And he looked me right in the eye and he said, my job is to love you. It's God's job to change you. You come in here, we're going to show you who Jesus is. And if you get changed, you give Jesus the credit. Don't give it to me.
All right. Now, we're going to have to go through it more carefully next time. But we've got 3 minutes. Take us quickly to your transformation so we leave this episode with the hope of your changed life. How did you leave the Laura behind?
Well, I began to realize once I started studying psychology at UC Santa Cruz, I began to realize that, you know, this is a whole fantasy life that I didn't change, that the information that they tell you that you're changing to a female is false. It's probably the greatest medical fraud known to man is gender change surgery. The whole thing is a fraud. It's fraud as far as a treatment. It's fraud as far as changing somebody's gender. And it is not a treatment for anything. If you have psychological issues before the surgery, you're going to have psychological issues after the surgery. And most of the people have deep psychological issues, depression, bipolar disorders, and all kinds of others. I happen to have suffered from a dissociative disorder because of the abuse, but I found that out many years after the surgery. They do not do good, deep studies psychologically into people's lives, trying to find out why are they trying to disconnect from their birth gender, and that's what needs to be done.
So did you find your earlier faith, and how did you get closer to God, and how did God pull you out? You've got about a minute and a half here.
Okay. Well, I really found it in this great group of people at this little church in Foster City who allowed me to do what they called a prayer letter. As I was Laura, they allowed me to share what was going on in my life and write a prayer letter to 35 or 40 people that they sent it out to. And it allowed me this sort of vehicle to share the struggle I was having. And in that process, I began to have a great way of looking at myself and what my life was about. And I think those prayer letters and asking for their prayers and asking for church support. Now, I was going to church as Laura, but they watched me transform back to Walt at that church, which was great. And I got to do a Sunday sermon study. One Sunday, three services, and the pastor, when it was all done, he says, now I'm really ticked off at you. You're the only one that's ever got a standing ovation here doing a sermon. you don't get standing ovations for sermons. But it was because Christ had transformed my life and allowed me to walk out of it. But it took time. These things don't come quickly, and I need for the audience to know that it isn't, just a snap decision and people change. It takes a process. It took a long time to get there. It's going to take a long time for him to come back.
Well, Walt, we are looking forward to the next two segments of our interview. It's fascinating testimony. I'm so thankful to the Lord how he's worked in your life. We're talking to Walt Heyer, and this is just a blessing to hear how God changes people, even transsexuals. Walt's website is Trading My Sorrows. That's his book. You can also go to sexchangeinfo.com, sexchangeinfo.com. Our website is Americans for Truth. Go out there and stand for truth. Thank you. God bless.
Thank you.
This was the Americans for Truth Hour with your host, Peter LaBarbera. Tune in Saturdays at 11 p.m. to hear compelling interviews with everyday heroes on the front lines of the culture war. People who put faith and truth above the lies of political correctness. Stay informed and engaged on the issues of life, marriage, and the God-ordained family. Please stand with them as they work to make America, in the words of President Ronald Reagan, a shining city on the hill. And once again, one nation under God. The Americans for Truth Hour, Saturdays at 11 p.m. on AM 1160.